Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. November 18, 2020. What do Jews have to do with inciting anti-Semitism? From my Facebook page, Michael Leitman, November 18, 2020. The editor of one of the papers where I write regular op-eds requested more information on my message that if Jews are not united, they bring anti-Semitism on themselves. Specifically, he wanted to know my sources for making this argument so insistently. He is correct, people need to know where ideas come from, especially ones that are hard to swallow. Therefore, I have decided to write a series of articles that explain where Jews come from and why they have always been hated, with a few brief exceptions that also didn't end well. But before I begin, I'd like to recommend my latest publication on this subject, The Jewish Choice, Unity or Anti-Semitism, Historical Facts on Anti-Semitism as a Reflection of Jewish Social Discord. It will give you ample information about the origins of the Jewish people, the root of Jew hatred, what they ought to do about it, and how their fate relates directly to their unity or lack thereof. In this series, I will provide sources, but not nearly as much as you will find in the book. In the first articles, I'll focus on the origin of our nation. I will show that anti-Semitism, albeit without that name, began as soon as our nation started forming. Abraham, the father of the nation, was an inquisitive man. The son of a venerated priest by the name of Terah, he, too, joined the family business and worked at his father's shop selling amulets and idols. In Misneh Torah, Maimonides' renowned composition, the 12th century sage explains that Abraham had neither a teacher nor a tutor. Instead, he was wedged in Ur of the Chaldeans, Babylonian city, among the illiterate idol worshippers, with his mother and father and all the people worshipping stars, and he, worshipping with them. But as just said, Abraham was inquisitive, idols didn't satisfy him. His heart roamed and understood until he attained the path of truth and understood the line of justice with his own correct wisdom, writes Maimonides. Abraham understood that there was only one force in the world, and called that force God. To his idol-worshipping contemporaries, this was revolutionary thinking, blasphemy, if you will. Despite the objection of his father and even the dismay of King Nimrod, Abraham insisted on spreading the message to his country folk. He planted this tenet in their hearts and composed books about it, writes Maimonides. He taught his son, Isaac, and Isaac sat and taught and warned, and informed Jacob and appointed him a teacher, to sit and teach and keep all those who accompanied him. And Jacob the patriarch taught all his sons, and separated Levi and appointed him as the head, and had him sit and learn the way of God and to keep Abraham's commandments. The books that Abraham wrote relayed that two forces emanate from the singular force called God, giving and receiving. They explain that all of reality consists of interactions between the two forces. When they are balanced, things run smoothly, when they are not, bad things happen. Abraham noticed that in his days, the receiving force was becoming significantly more intense than the giving force. He noticed that people had become more self-absorbed, impatient toward each other, and tried to encourage them to be kinder to each other in order to balance giving with receiving. This is why to this day, Abraham represents mercy and kindness. The Babylonians, proud and selfish, decided to build a tower that would demonstrate their greatness. However, the tower, which we now call the Tower of Babylon, was a testimony to their hatred for each other. The book Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer, one of the most prominent Midrashim, commentaries, on the Torah offers a vivid description of the Babylonians' vanity. Nimrod said to his people, "Let us, build us, a great city and dwell in it, lest we are scattered across the earth. And let us, build a great tower within it, rising toward the heaven. And let us, make us, a great name in the land." But more important than their vanity, the commentary offers a glimpse into the Babylonians' alienation from each other. They built it high. And, if a person fell and died, they would not mind him. But if a brick fell, they would sit and weep and say, "When will another come up in its stead?" Despite Abraham's warnings that their way would lead them nowhere good, they mocked him. The book Kolmevesa writes that Abraham would go outside and call out loud that there is one creator to the world. Alas, to the people, he seemed as though he were insane, and children and grown-ups would hurl stones at him. Yet, Abraham did not mind any of it and kept on calling. Despite the derision, Abraham's efforts did not go unrewarded. After he was expelled from Babylon and left for the land of Canaan, he kept on circulating his discovery. Maimonides's elaborate descriptions tell us that he began to call out to the whole world, wandering from town to town and from kingdom to kingdom until he arrived in the land of Canaan. When people in the places where he wandered gathered around him and asked him about his words, he taught everyone, until he brought them to the path of truth. Finally, thousands and tens of thousands assembled around him, and they are the people of the house of Abraham. That was the beginning of the Jewish people, an assembly of people who had nothing in common but their conviction that receiving must be balanced with giving, and who were willing to toil in order to develop the quality of mercy within them. In the next article, I will focus on Abraham's descendants' entry into Egypt and the beginning of Jew hatred. My thoughts on Twitter, November 18, 2020. We see how in nature one eats another. This is because we treat each other egoistically. With our ego, we influence all other degrees of nature, the still, vegetative and animate. When we correct the ego desire, the wolf will dwell in peace with the lamb, no one will attack anyone else. Unity is a sure remedy against the virus. It is a salutary means against all problems, since we then become similar to the common, global, integral nature. By uniting in this way, we connect more to the general force of nature, which will properly arrange all systems of our life. The more an athlete trains, the stronger he becomes, strengthening the ego. He is always pleased with his achievements. A Kabbalist strives to weaken the ego through the studies, in order to rise above it. For egoism, the state seems unfortunate, but for a Kabbalist this is a desirable state. A Kabbalist looks at his animate body as a researcher. In the animate, the force of reception, egoism, is revealed, but a Kabbalist wants the force of bestowal to be revealed in him. He feels himself as a completely neutral researcher, not belonging to reception nor to bestowal. A Kabbalist rejoices at the bad just as the good. However, this does not mean he's a masochist, because a Kabbalist does not attribute suffering to himself, but only to egoism, which was created by the Creator. He perceives egoism not as his own will to enjoy, but as a force that comes from the Creator. "I am always rising and falling, man, mad." That is how each one works in the group, all 10 of our cylinders. By absorbing the friend's desire, I want to bring them closer to the Creator. From him I receive forces, fillings, revelations, and pass this to the friends. I am a conveyor belt in both directions. On the first roll of the piston, I drown in the 10 and draw the friend's desires from there. On the second roll I raise these desires to the Creator. This ascent is man. I ask for everyone, and receive a force from above. With this force I descend down and pass it on to the friends, receive a new desire from them and raise man. Every person should be the smallest one in the 10, and the greatest one. If everyone in the 10 works this way, we will get an engine with 10 cylinders. Just imagine how powerful that is. All the pistons pump up our common volume, until we overfill the measure and the Creator is revealed inside. Education by encouragement. Question: how does the change in man's heart occur? I understand that coercion cannot change our feelings, but I do not see that education changes our feelings. Answer: the fact is that we do not have an example of such education. After all, today's education is based on compulsion, where you act with punishment and not with encouragement. Education by encouragement means that you show a person how good circumstances lead to a good future, and how bad deeds lead to failure. When studying the science of Kabbalah, the surrounding upper light acts on us, and awakens in us, the future corrected states with its glow. This is not the case in any other method. From CapTV's Communication Skills, September 11, 2020. Conditional equality. Question: is equality one of the main principles of communication? Answer: in general, yes. But this is conditional equality because there is no one person who is equal to another. Otherwise, we would have become one. The principle of correct communication is that everyone can express themselves as fully as possible in a collective action. Question: throughout history, the meaning of social equality has constantly changed. In antiquity, equality was observed within the estates, while there was no equality between the estates. In medieval Christian philosophy, it was believed that everyone is equal before God, although everyone understood what God is in their own way. In the Age of Enlightenment, the concept of social equality was based on personal qualities, on individualism. Everyone should have equal rights and equality before the law. But they did not take into account that all people are different by nature, and so it still turned out to be inequality. Socialist teachings led people to equalization. As a result of the constant desire for equality, society has come to the triumph of liberalism and permissiveness. How do you see the next stage of development? Answer: equality means that everyone should strive to make society integral to the best of their abilities. In this integrality, we will become conditionally equal. Everyone will receive and give as much as they can, need, and should. We cannot weigh each person and say how much they owe and how much they do not. It is the right relationship between people that should lead them not to statistical, but conditional equality. Question: if everyone got everything they wanted and everyone was satisfied with their needs, would it be possible to say that we are equal in this? Answer: no. Even if you imagine such a fantastic future, it will not give anything. It is not enough for our nature to receive only. We must also give because we are social elements that exist at the expense of each other. So here you need to enter another parameter: how much I get and how much I give. One cannot exist without the other. From CapTV's Communication Skills, September 11, 2020. The wisdom of the crowd and the wisdom of Kabbalah. Question: the effect of the wisdom of crowd is that the generalized opinion of a large group of people allows for more accurate answers and predictions. But this only happens when members of the crowd make judgments independently of one another. Why? How does it work? Answer: the principle of collective data processing, where everyone looks for himself at opposite opinions, opposite views, opposite schools. This is a slightly different principle than in Kabbalah. And when they try to generalize the result together, it turns out much better and much more true than the result each one would have reached individually. But this is still not what Kabbalah says. According to Kabbalah, we should rise to the level of faith above reason, that is, above ourselves, and solve problems not in an egoistic way. How much smarter each of us is and can connect more with others, but be in faith above reason, be able to master the strength of the team, to rise above the individuality of each one and above the common individuality. By adding up our egoisms, we simultaneously collect together the desire to rise above our total ego. It turns out that on one hand, we have a huge common egoism, and on the other hand, we acquire anti-egoistic strength. And then we can really do a very high quality, completely new action, which is built on giving and not receiving. Remark: this is similar to what Einstein said: we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. It is always solved at a higher level. That is, the next step is connection between people. My comment: yes. And although Einstein instinctively came to this, The diagnosis is correct. From CapTV's Communication Skills, September 25, 2020. My new article on LinkedIn: What Intolerance Means for the Jews. November 16 is the International Day for Tolerance. If I were asked to give a fitting title to 2020, I'd call it the Year of Intolerance. But I won't, since I know that tomorrow we'll be even more intolerant. Many people thought that the 2016 presidential election was the ugliest in history. As we can already see, it's nothing compared to 2020. In 2024, can we even be certain there will be an election, much less an honest, free election? At a time when all the world needs is tolerance and unity, Jews cannot engage in anything other than establishing and nurturing precisely those two values. Anything else that they do works against them, and if they can't see it now, they will see it very soon. But if they wait until they see that their thinking was off course, it will be too late to avoid the heartbreak. Judging by the fanaticism and vindictiveness shamelessly percolating into the surface, I don't think that people even appreciate democracy anymore. All they want is for people to be like them, and if they aren't, they shouldn't exist. The tensions between the two sides in America will only grow. No side will take abuse lying down. But this civil war will not end like the first one. In this one, there are Jews embroiled in all of this, and as it's always happened when Jews are concerned, the parties will conclude that it's all the Jews' fault and unleash hell on them. The Jews are supposed to be the unifying factor. It is the nation that coined the motto "Love your neighbor as yourself," and "That which you hate, do not do to your neighbor." Instead, Jews are among the leaders on the more extreme fringes, inciting and even calling for bloodshed almost explicitly. When blood is shed, they will be blamed for it and both sides will unite against them. If the Jews are not uniting the world doesn't want them and regards them not only as superfluous, but as injurious. Admittedly, if Jews are inciting parties against each other, then the parties are right for hating them. At a time when all the world needs is tolerance and unity, Jews cannot engage in anything other than establishing and nurturing precisely those two values. Anything else that they do works against them, and if they can't see it now, they will see it very soon. But if they wait until they see that their thinking was off course, it will be too late to avoid the heartbreak. Michael Leitman, on Quora: What Happens to the Soul After Death? We have the ability to attain our eternal soul while we are alive in our current bodies, and those who do so, continue living in the soul, as it is detached from the body's death. For those who have not attained their souls in this life, they have what Kabbalah terms ereshimo, a record or reminiscence, which is like a code that contains all of a person's qualities. After our body's death, the Reshimo needs to attach to a new body in this world and restart a process of coming closer to its ultimate destination, the root of the soul, while it is in that particular body. Moreover, we all have a Reshimo, as it is an informational gene from which we sooner or later develop a soul. In other words, while we develop through trying to fulfill corporeal desires of food, sex, family, money, honor, control and knowledge, we also have a small reshimo, a so-called point in the heart, which makes us ask questions about the meaning of our lives, why we are here, where we are from, where we are headed, that is, existential questions. This reshimo is a desire to attain our soul, and to work out exactly what is going on behind the scenes of our lives. The more that this reshimo disrupts us from simply getting along in our corporeal desires, the more we find ourselves questioning the source of our lives, and seeking answers through various teachings. At a certain stage, we encounter the wisdom of Kabbalah, which provides a practical method for the soul's attainment. Age and gender differences. Question: In the first parts of the integral education courses, men and women study together. Some research suggests that in a production team where there are women, many decisions are made much better and faster. And when we are engaged in spiritual development, there must be a division at some stage. Why? Answer: there must be a gender division because in Kabbalah we work with very deep internal properties of a person, and mixed groups are a great hindrance. At the initial stage, men and women can work together for several months, no more than 6 months, and then they quickly need to be separated. Question: do they need to be divided by age? Answer: age doesn't really matter. I believe that it is even better to mix them so that, as in our daily life, the old help the young, and the young help the old. There is no contradiction in this. Nature did not divide us sharply by age. On the contrary, generations help and support each other. But joint male and female training can be very harmful in that it will deviate people from the intentions of bestowal and love to the level of hormones. From CAB TV's Communication Skills, August 21, 2020. Why do we need the method of connection? Question: in times of war, there is always cooperation because there is a common goal of surviving and ending the war. What common goal can there be among all sectors of society in peacetime? Answer: I don't see much difference between wartime and peacetime because today we are at war with each other and with nature, which is worse than a nuclear war. We do not see how to break free of contradictions or mutual hatred. These contradictions are present everywhere, from the highest levels of our society and governments to families and individuals. Our egoism dominates at all levels and reaches a state where we are incapable of listening to each other at all. Therefore, we need a method of connection. Question: can a common goal be to conquer nature, which is constantly putting pressure on us? Answer: it is possible that this goal will organize us, and guide us, correctly toward each other. We will start taking the right steps to unite in order to avoid perishing in the cataclysms that nature is preparing for us. From CAB TV's Communication Skills, September 25, 2020. Freedom is a way out of egoism. Question: throughout history, people have fought for freedom. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights states that, too, in the exercise of his rights and freedoms, everyone shall be subject only to such limitations as are determined by law solely for the purpose of securing due recognition and respect for the rights and freedoms of others and of meeting the just requirements of morality, public order and the general welfare in a democratic society. Which in essence means freedom consists in the ability to do anything that does not harm another. Do you agree with this saying? Answer: partly. This is not the full meaning of freedom, but at least the first and main point. Question: if we consider the concept of freedom in terms of communication between people, how free are we in our behavior? We understand that our genes and environment almost completely shape our behavior. What, then, is our freedom? Answer: it is to put yourself in the service of the connection between each other, which leads everyone to the most beautiful state, to unity. This is the only thing we need to realize, as the possibility of free motion between us. Question: from the point of view of nature, should a person be free? Answer: from the point of view of nature, this is not given at all. Freedom does not exist in any biological organisms, including humans. But by rising above one's egoistic nature, by getting out of oneself, a person can reach a new, altruistic nature and the find freedom in the form of bestowal and love for others. Freedom is a way out of egoism. From CAB TV's Communication Skills, September 11, 2020. On the balance of two forces. Question: your teacher Abesh wrote that creation from the moment of birth consists of two opposites, the will to receive and the will to bestow. There is no greater oppositeness than between these phenomena that appear together one after another. And there is a middle line that includes both states, receiving and bestowing. Does a person have to balance both forces in himself? Answer: he has to gather these two forces to achieve the goal. And the goal is mutual support, mutual guarantee, when each force, as if, decreases itself and does everything to support the other one. In such mutual direction they work between themselves. From CabTV's Communication Skills, September 11, 2020. New Life 462. The Conflict Between Nationalism and Democracy.
Hello, and thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show with Rav Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello. Hello, Nitzan Mazoz. Hello. Today we'd like to talk about the nationality law that really stirs up the Israeli society in the past few days. It's going to be very interesting. Nitzan. Yep. So this topic is really talked about, and we'd like to speak on this specific show about the conflict between the idea of being a Jewish state, national Jewish state, and democracy, because actually on this basis is the whole whirlpool going on, because there's a complaint that it's impossible. There's a claim that it's impossible to be both a Jewish state that is actually national, that puts the nationality in the first place, and also democratic. Naturally, when it's national, then it unites a certain people, and then whoever is not Jewish and lives in that same country and becomes second-grade citizen, and there's no equality that democracy wants to reach, and there's a big question. Could a Jewish democratic state exist? And there are many discussions and resistance and this and that. So it's a very big question. Now it's known, it's something that is known the world over, that there's always tension in a national country. How do you keep the balance between the nationality and the balance on the one hand, and on the other hand, equality? So first of all, I'd like to hear maybe your opinion. We'll read the quotation, the paragraph that speaks about a democratic state. It says that the land of Israel will have a democratic regime, and Israel will be based on freedom, justice, and peace, as our prophet said, and will tend for the needs of each and every citizen. In simple words, either it's a national state that is Jewish, or it's the land of all citizens, of all its citizens. So, first question, how do you see this conflict according to your definitions, according to your definition of what is the people of Israel, the state of Israel, how it should work? Is there a conflict with democracy, with equality, with those values of justice that the country is all in turmoil about? Of course, certainly there's a conflict. First of all, I don't know what they mean by democracy. If they point at some European or American countries as being as democratical countries, then of course it's not democracy. Democracy, it means the rule of the people, or the people rule, demos, people, nation. And where do you see that the people rule their country and not the politicians that have taken this regime into their hands, and they suck from the people all of their blood, their strength, their everything? There's no democracy. It's just nice words. This is the first thing. The other thing is that the people of Israel can't be a democratical nation, even as it was in the past, in the history with the Greek, so in those times, because the laws of ancient Greece and the laws of Israel are completely counter laws. Against democracy, we counter to democracy, we speak about the law of love. Is there a democracy in a family? Mom, dad, kids, is there democracy there? What is democracy in a family? Do you have kids? You, in your family, is it democratic? I don't know. Define democracy, and then I'll say, it says equality for everyone, and so on. Equality for everyone. There is a mom and dad and their kids, and there's a difference, essential difference between mom, dad, and the kids. And the kids say, why don't we have democracy in our family? Because I'm the dad and you're the child. So, I have a certain role, and you have a different role from nature. So is it democracy or not? Probably not. So if you say that democracy is equality, we're different. I mean, democracy is something that it's not clear to us. In any place or in any country, we see according to Europe and so on. If there are laws and each citizen is under these laws and then no one can jump him and do something to him, but you understand. It's all arranged to the according to these laws, and then according to these laws you live in calm, relatively organized. That's called democracy, I don't know. Also, if there were a king that would rule, then he would maybe rule even better over everyone else, and there would have been democracy. Would it have been democracy? Democracy is the power of the people. Where is the power of the people? You see, once every 4 years, they tell you, you can go and vote, suppose. And then, you choose the government, according to democracy, democratic vote. What is democracy? That everyone can vote. That you as if come, and as if yeah, your voice equals my voice. Yeah, and everyone equals. What are they equal? Later comes the new regime that do what they need to. They don't ask you anymore. You chose it. That's it. And that's it? Okay, that's obvious. You've just taken the discussion to a place of looking very deeply at democracy, meaning that you don't have anything else in this world. So it says that democracy is a bad regime, but it's the least of two evils. Okay, but we don't want to look at it from such a broad aspect of democracy and so on, but concretely to our discussion, the conflict. It's like two counter forces operating. If you can explain exactly what. There are two counter forces, one force that wants to unify and give some kind of a uniqueness, and the other hand that it wants to be the state of everyone. So you can't be unique and belong to, and it belongs equally to everyone. So this is the conflict. I don't see any conflict here. So if you can explain. First of all, if we define that this is the Jewish state. Jews are called the people that unite around the law of love, the law of connection. That this is how Abraham established them 3,500 years ago. And this is how they lived until the destruction of their country, the destruction of the temple 2,000 years ago. And today we return to the same state as if we got the opportunity to build here the people of Israel in the land of Israel. And therefore, let's return to how it should be. Because our nation has a constitution before there was any hint about these primitive tribes somewhere out there in ancient Babylon. We already had a constitution. All these things already existed. We existed according to very clear laws between man and his neighbor and family and the regime and the king and everything. And to the land, animals, everything. We have laws for all of it. We have an entire method for it. The Torah, the Tanakh, Mishnah, Gemara, the Kabbalah books. No nation has such a constitution. Only what's the problem? That then we kept this constitution and love another as thyself as much as we could. There were periods more, periods less, but we were in all in constant scrutinizations. We were in constant struggles between us how to keep it. There were constant discussions about how will we keep this law of love more and more for it to dwell among us, whereas now we have to return to that same state. And then we will be the land of Israel and the nation of Israel. Now this law of love, it does not separate between me and others. It says just one thing. We are the people of Israel. We keep ourselves in the land of Israel according to the laws of love, like in ancient Babylon. Anyone could come and join according to those very conditions. It's open for everyone. It's open for everyone. In the times of the temple too, in those times too, plenty of people joined that they didn't come out of Babylon with us together. The greatest of the Torah, the greatest sages, they all came from there. They all, Rabbi Akiva and Unkelus and so on. So why can't it be now? Of course it can. We besides, are now not in just in redemption, but in complete redemption, the final redemption. That we have to introduce the whole world into this law of love. Let's publicize the very opposite, both to our neighbors and also to the whole world. What are we about to do? And let's not do it out of these discussions. Who makes these discussions there with all these politicians? Anyone operates there out of their own ego, their own egoistic desire. We have to make it as the basis of the nation according to the true laws which are adapted to nature. Adapted to the general nature. Where did this law of ours come from? It's not that we wanted to do it this way or Abraham felt like it. It came to him in some dream. But we have reached the law of love, the law of equivalence of form, the law of proximity, the law of love another as thyself, don't do to others what you hate, the law of Arvut, love another as thyself, all these things, we have received them from nature that we have researched at Abraham, and later on we, with them, we have inquired the general law of nature that encompasses the whole of reality, the law that encompasses all of reality, that sustains it, that it is a godly law, the upper law. And from here we have taken upon ourselves to exist in accordance with this upper law, to be with it in reciprocity, in homeostasis, in equivalence of form. And therefore, it's not something that we yank out of an ordinary person's mind, but we derive it from the laws of nature, the highest laws above physics, chemistry, biology, zoology, and so on. It's the laws of the upper behavior of people. This is actually what our world has come to today, that it pushes us in this direction, because unless we exist, we'll explode the world. We can't. Our ego is ready to burst out and really have a third world war and maybe the end. But specifically, we advance and feel that we need to keep this law, the law of love, the law of connection. Only our ego doesn't allow us to realize this, to keep this. And here comes the method that says how to realize it. This is the secret among the people of Israel, the law, the secret Torah that we have to open for ourselves and for the rest of the world and keep it. This is the new constitution that has to be revealed now to the people of Israel and to the rest of the world. What does it mean, the true nationality, the true nation, the true country, that for the whole world to be as one family? And the time has come. Therefore, we have to reach these discussions and express our opinion. You brought up a point here which is very important in my opinion. You talked about our true nationality, and the problem in our country is that there's no differentiation between nationality and religion, and it creates a problem because immediately there's a thought that the Constitution is religious. So what's the difference? First of all, we can't keep religious laws in our country, in our times, for them to be as a law in a country. What, I obligate each and every one, what, if he's secular, but with respect to love of others, I can obligate each and every one by education, because this is an obligation set to us by nature, by the Creator. What does it say? Love, that you must love. This is what we have to reach. You say that it's religious laws. Our religion is also based on the law of love. Love another as thyself is the rule that comprehends the entire Torah. This is what we have to keep. And whoever wants to keep the practical precepts, it's his own concern. But between us, first of all, this rule has to exist, love of others, which is above everything, which has nothing to do with religions or ethnic. Religions came later. It all came later. But the comprehensive religion that includes the entire world is the law of love. Love another as thyself. And as a result, we reach love the Creator thy God. That's it. That is the basis of the general nature, the general religion, which is the uniform religion for the entire world. And all the rest, they can behave however they want. Islam, Christianity with all of their branches, and Judaism with all of its branches, it doesn't matter. The main thing is that everyone will be connected above all these religions, and there are many other religions and beliefs in this world above all that, for all of us to unite based on the law of love, because it is required by nature. By nature, by the upper nature, meaning it is a higher law, yes, that we must keep, like the laws of nature, like gravity, like any other law. Our laws, that our body exists accordingly, all the laws that we learn from science, it is also a law that we must keep, otherwise we are approaching a state where we will have such an opposite form to this law that we will not have the ability to exist. The law of love that you talk about, there's no, the conflict that you talked about doesn't exist, there's no gap between them. Of course, we can accept each and every one, whether he is an Arab, a Jew, Christian, whoever, whatever, from all nations of the world. Please go ahead, come. But on one condition, the first of all, you undergo the education of love, which does not belong to any nation. It doesn't belong to anyone. And join. Join. It's not important for us. We are having workshops and the town square, join us, Arabs, Bedouins, Jewish, seculars, no problem. We suddenly see what a connection there is between them, what happiness and joy there is suddenly, what unity and warmth they feel as a result of what? Of sitting half an hour together? Only because it's correctly arranged, managed, targeting them at reciprocity, at love. We know how to do it. We know how to educate the people toward love. And I hope that we will be heard. You told about it, so I remember that I saw in one of the articles, Druze was interviewed, and he says that he serves in the army and that he loves the country, but when there is the tikva, anthem, and he has to sing about the Jewish nation, he suddenly feels that it's not bad. The Jewish nation, the Jewish soul, it's incorrect words. Because what is it really if we talk this sentence that is in our anthem? How would you define what does the Jewish soul aspire for? Jewish, Yehudi, is from the word Yichud, unification, that it doesn't talk about Jews or Druze or whoever is aspiring for unity is Jewish, regardless of his history. He would have accepted it completely differently. A Jew could be each and every one of each and every country, each and every person. Jew, it's a principle? Yes, and only. This is what happened with Abraham, that he put together from all the different nations that were in Babylon. Different people came to him. They all became Jews as a result of connecting. So define, please, what does Jew mean? What is this principle to be Jewish? It's called to connect with anyone who wants to be a part of this in order to discover in the connection between us unity, and inside this unity to discover the upper force, the Creator. The upper force, the general law of nature. That's called Jewish. And we see how they join us in the framework of our academy, our international academy. South Americans from Siberia, from China, from Europe, from America, different people like this, like that, regardless of nation, nationality, race, sex, yes, all become Jews, wanting to be in unity between them and to keep on going this way because we all belong to one higher force. Okay, so I'd like to take this crisis that we found ourselves in and give it some hope. How? Through this process that we're undergoing now as a country, with so many questions that suddenly come up, rise into the public discussion, how can we strengthen even maybe the spirit of the Jewish nationality the way you've described it? How can we shift this whole direction so it will cause each one of us to truly be proud of their nationality, to feel unity and evoke love among us toward this nationality that doesn't really exist there? It's only on condition that we transcend everything that we had and we start building from scratch the nation of Israel, the state of Israel, and the nationality that, by giving the right education to each and every person, to turn him into a Jew. When you look now, let's look at the future of the land of Israel, its expectation. There could be several scripts. The one script is that we'll keep on going the way we are today. Not for long. No? What could happen? Because we got an opportunity here to build, to realize, to build the real people of Israel in the land of Israel. If we don't do it, all this opportunity ends. We'll have to leave this place, and who knows if we'll get another opportunity for it. So if I'd like to try and determine this law, define it precisely according to your concept, the people of Israel is, the nation of Israel, the state of Israel is the state of people that live according to the law of love. The land of Israel, it is the general desire of all of those people that connect according to the law of love and discover inside that connection between them, the upper force, according to the law of equivalence of form. A Jew is each and every one who is aimed at unity with others, down to loving others thyself, and sees his role in publicizing this law of love another as thyself to the whole world, to bring the whole world to it, to be light for the nations in this respect. I don't know all the laws and so on, but these people, they have to understand what is in the foundation of our nation, and if they want to put together some kind of a document, then only in the way that they will learn our foundations, that we have writings that speak about the people of Israel, unity, connection, everything that it says in the Torah speaks only about this. Were the people of the state of Israel to adopt something, would take one of these things and realize it, what would be the attitude of the people in the world? Because we are already, that we start discussing this, we are already condemned by the whole people. What direction would it take? What response would we see from the world? From the process of being light for the nations, that by this we would have to explain to the whole world and to ourselves, what is our destination, what is the basis of the nation, who are we, why are we special, and everyone in the world agrees that we're a special nation, only don't exactly know how, but in our instinctive inclination toward it, we feel that they are different, they are special. It's not South Americans or North Americans or Russians or Arabs or these or those, it's something special from all the world, something in which there is something hidden in this nation. In this nation, there is something that they're being treated differently, and it is the upper force that arranges this. The upper force. Because even the nations that we were never in contact with hate us. Let's start advertising our true law of nationality, and you will see how everyone starts coming closer to us. Oh, go ahead, do it. What do you need? We'll help you. You'll see. I promise you. It's like you see a good attitude suddenly when people sit around a round table, whether it's Arabs, Bedouins, Druze, Jewish, seculars. Suddenly between them you see that there is contact and warmth. You will feel this among the entire world. Start publicizing your destination. What are you planning on doing with the world according to the law of nature and according to what you have to do, and everyone will understand. Oh, this is their secret. We felt that they are keeping some secret, some force from which it will come out to the entire world. We thought that they can't discover it. They didn't know it themselves. Now, and they necessitated us to do it by this anti-Semitism, they will force us to reveal it, to reveal this law, nonetheless, the general law of love. Thank you very much, Rav Lightman. Our time, unfortunately, is up. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best in your life.